Okay, here we are on January the 8th at the round table discussion at the night party. I'm Thomas Robb.
Jason Robb.
We've been discussing here for 30 minutes already.
And then
we thought maybe we'll start recording this. The show that actually started. So, anyway, we're excited about the election of Donald Trump. We talked about that here recently. We haven't had a show in a couple of weeks because of Christmas holidays. So on. But we got an inauguration coming up on January 20th. That's just, 12 days away?
Yeah.
And, so they're claiming the anti-Trump people are claiming they're going to stop the inauguration.
Break it up, bust it down, set it on fire.
I don't even see that. First off, I don't even remotely see that happen.
No, I don't see it happen.
They're going to have so much security in police force. And then there's going to be just a lot of Trump supporters there.
Yeah, they're not going to do it. But the point, their intent, that's what's important.
Absolutely.
Right. And the thing is what we've been saying now for ever since the election, pretty much, is all the focus for security is being focused on D.C.
Right.
And the plaza there and the mall and stuff. All the focus is being put there. And what a lot of people aren't considering is that these anarchist groups who's vowing to shut down the election, they're also vowing to cause disruption across the country, even overseas at U.S. embassies. And so while all the attention and security is being focused on D.C., that's pretty much laying the cities across America bare for problems to disrupt and violence to erupt against white people.
Well, and you can have disruption through several means. One is you got your local cities and just be the regular thugs of, throwing stuff in the windows. You got the ability of people just to walk in the middle of these interstates and blocking interstates, shutting them down. Yeah. Whatever to cause a problem or issue, that's what's going to happen in all these major cities, because we saw these riots that was going on when Donald Trump won that was not really even being reported.
Right.
And so what's going to happen either the night before, the day of, or the day after of January 20th, that it will occur.
Okay, I forgot where we're at, Jason.
We were just talking about the anarchists, that's going to occur on January 20th, throughout the United States in your major cities, that people will walk in the middle of the roads and interstates, blocking traffic, or just demonstrations in your major cities.
Well, it doesn't take much to set some of these places off now. Like the one I'm thinking of is down in Charleston when that armed black guy got shot by another black police officer, and they rioted for, 3 or 4 days?
Right.
People were jumping off the bridges there on the interstates to, try to escape. People were getting pulled out of their cars and so forth. So, I mean, this is a really nationwide event that possibly could happen. We're not going to say for sure, but...
Well, you already know that the Democratic Party in general, they are very upset they lost. And they have already...
they've incited violence.
Yeah, they've incited violence. They're encouraging violence. They're encouraging even more extreme groups.
The narrative that Trump is not really the president.
Right.
Most of the people voted against him. That's what keeps trying to say that all the time.
Right.
And
it's the evil electoral college.
Yeah.
So most people did not vote for Trump, but we have this evil white establishment of electoral college that caused Trump to win. And as a result of that, he really is not the true presidency. It's Hillary Clinton.
And plus, it was subverted by the Russian government.
Yeah.
They created
Well, they had the few days ago now that they had the Senate hearings with the Armed Services Committee. And I don't remember the lady's name, woman, whatever, but she's a senator from Hawaii. And she kept hitting home on one point in particular that nobody else, I haven't seen any commentators mention it, but I thought it was a key point she was making, because she was trying to infer that the political parties themselves, because they are so important to the electoral process in America, the political parties should become under control of the federal government and receive security and protection. Just like if you harm a postal worker or something like that, the whatever you call it, the penalties
right.
are very severe, more than if it was just a regular civilian or something like that.
Even it's kind of like the post office.
Even somebody working
post office,
the,
yeah.
Even people working on the highway.
Right.
If some rural construction worker gets hit by a vehicle,
yeah.
it's a more severe crime than if you're just walking down the street.
Right.
Right. So her point that she was trying to get across was that the political parties are so important that they're not just a part of the civilian structure of men and women who come together and try to promote someone for office. They should really be considered part of the government's infrastructure and therefore should come under more government protection, but that means government control.
And regulation.
And regulation.
Yeah,
and that was the point that she was trying to get across, because she said that, you know, the penalties against Putin and Russia and so forth, it shouldn't be seen that they were attacking just some civilian entity. They, you know, people should consider that they were attacking the heart of the government itself. And that's a really, really scary thought, that they're trying to push that narrative of bringing all the political parties under the control of the government.
Well, it was scary about that.
Yeah, give them security, okay. Well, that also means you're in control.
Absolutely. And so when we're talking about these political parties, it's just war fought during the time of peace.
Mm-hmm.
These political parties then are actually will be armed, you know, because they're a protection of the federal government. But then who decides
right.
if you're a legitimate political party?
Right.
So you have the Republicans. Republicans.
Support.
Yeah,
but
Republicans
already,
and Democrats.
But they're already kind of doing that, because if you to a certain category, the government's going to help finance your campaign.
Sure.
Right.
They already do that with the Democrat Republican Party. I don't see the financing campaign of other, like the American Freedom Party or us, or
right.
other political party.
Right.
They're not helping finance their campaign.
No.
Right.
So,
well, they're going to make the rules and they're going to make the rules and standards that will benefit the Republican
yeah.
and Democratic Party, but
yeah.
no one else.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
because even the Green Party, which is somewhat a big political party, third party,
Libertarian,
it's very hard for them
to
get through, like, be on the debates and stuff like that. Because,
yeah.
well, you're not really legitimate. You're not going to really have any way to win the presidency. So you're just not even going to be in part of the
yeah.
system.
And speaking of Russia and Putin, they also, during that hearing, I forget the individual's name, but he was talking and asserting about how the Russians are even exploiting and financing the far right party in France, and which is Le Pen
right.
on the National Front, and that they are behind the rise of nationalism and Brexit and the rise of all this national sentiment.
Trump and Greece.
Yeah,
and
see, that's
in Europe, that Russia is behind it all. And
well, that's the deal with Putin. Is I see Putin as one of your early nationalist that
mm-hmm.
rose up against globalism.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they try to create all this animosity towards Putin, because he was one of the first one that came up, fall kind of, and he came up as a Russian nationalist.
Right.
And they hated him for that. And then we had the Brexit vote. And now he got Trump American nationalist.
Yeah.
And then Le Pen, a French nationalist. And this whole globalist agenda is to put down, stomp out anybody that wants to create some nationalistic pride. And so this is the reason why they hate Le Pen and hate Putin.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's why they're trying to cause a division between Trump and Putin, is because they know that there's a potential alliance that could occur, because Trump is somewhat of a nationalist and a symbolism, maybe
yeah, right.
more than anything, because he is saying, we need to have America first. We don't need to be
right.
entangled with
sovereignty, nationalists, not a racial.
Right,
nationalist.
Exactly. And but to them, if Trump is going to have friendly relations with Putin, then potentially he could have friendly relations with Le Pen in France.
Mm-hmm.
The Brexit. I mean, he already has friendly relations with Niger over in Britain. Yeah,
right.
And so you have these other nationalist groups, maybe in Greece or Sweden. That's a scary thought for these internationalism.
There's even a story I saw the other day about Marie Le Pen, about how excited she is that Trump's going to build a wall.
Right.
You think, well, I'm going to have a French nationalist over in France be excited about Americans building a wall. And it's simply because she sees a potential ally in this effort against globalism.
Right. Well, because she knows that if immigration is slows down or stops in America, that's going to be more of a tendency to be of a European country that will have more of alliance with France.
Right.
If America becomes a non-white country, she knows that they're going to don't care about France if France becomes a non-French country.
Right. Well, the problem here in the States is, you know, they're trying to resurrect the fears of the Cold War era and, you know, this paranoia of Russia, nuclear weapons, and so on and so forth. You know, and we're talking about a completely different Russia today than what we're dealing with during the Cold War era.
Yeah.
Now, of course, there's still a lot of, Russia has a lot of Jewish capitalists there that are exploiting and so forth, just as we have here in the United States. But the infrastructure is totally different. Some of a lot of the leadership is different. And a lot of the people in Russia have really been rebelling against the Jewish authority that was the inception of the Cold War.
Well, David Duke's book, My Awakening, was being sold in
the Kremlin,
in the Kremlin
right.
when he was over there, you know, 10, 15 years ago.
Right.
But, you know, these people, so many of these people don't have any understanding of history. I heard a commentator the other day talking about his animosity towards Putin and so forth and how Trump is trying to change that. And he said, we need to understand, historically, Russia has been our enemy. And I'm thinking to myself, no, that's not true at all.
Mm-hmm.
Historically, Russia was always a friend of the United States. It wasn't until the Bolsheviks took over in 1917 they became an enemy of communism. But historically, Russia has always been an ally of the United States.
Right.
But historically, Russia has always been the enemy of America. And people said, oh, yeah, but and that's not true. Absolutely not true at all.
Yeah, well, definitely not. Well, you know, talking about, you know, Trump, you know, the inauguration coming up on January 20th, we have several associates of the Knights that are going to be there during the inauguration.
Associates and some good friends and so forth.
So they're going to be there, and it's going to be really exciting because they're going to, give a report to the Knights in our next edition of the Crusader. We'll have that in the paper as well as our e-news about the Trump election. And so it's going to be exciting for those associates of ours that will be there, kind of give a firsthand account of that ceremony. I think it's going to be really exciting.
And I'll point out they're not taking their families,
right?
Because there could be. You know, I mean, they're saying, the anarchists are saying there's going to be violence there.
Right.
So these individuals aren't going to take their families there, which is a wise move. But like you said, Jason, we'll have a report on that in the next issue of the Crusader and stuff online. One thing I do want to mention, kind of a change of subject, is that we haven't had a show here in a couple of weeks. But everybody at the national office has been very busy. We're revamping our websites. So we are consolidating all of our different media sites, the radio, news articles, video, everything, into one new website where everybody can get all their white nationalist news and everything and opinion and commentary from one specific spot. And then the Knights Party, our organizational public page, kkk.bz or .com, we're revamping that. And I'm really excited about it. And I think, you know, it's the kkk.bz, we went with a new appearance and all this stuff about 5 years ago. And 5 years is a long time in the internet age. And it's still at its current look, is still more impressive than a lot of websites out there. But we want to make sure that it's more user-friendly.
Right, and that's the thing. I mean, the Knights, we have historically have always kept abreast with with
ahead of the curve.
With ahead of the curve, but with technology.
Right. Yeah.
Whenever technology changes, we change. You know, regarding our publications, our formats on the internet. So we're always, you know, kept up to date. And so this revamping, also we're taking into account with so many people now using their cell phones.
Right.
So when people get on these websites, it'll be user friendly on their cell phones. Because I hate to say it, but even laptops.
Right.
People don't even use laptops anymore. Right. You know, they have their cell phones, or they'll have like the iPads and something like that.
Yeah.
Just very quickly.
Tablets
and everything. Yeah. So we're changing it that people will use obviously on their laptops and their computer at home, but also on their cell phones.
Right. Also, a lot of people aren't aware, but the Dice Party was the very first ones to begin writing on cave walls. we were right there at the beginning of technology.
Yeah.
We had stones and a rock. We started writing a cave wall.
And use a charcoal.
Well, I wasn't going back that far, but I was going to say I'm pretty confident that we're the first white nationalist organizations to have personal computers in our offices and so forth.
Well, and according to ADL, we're the first organization to be on the internet.
Right.
Well, you know, like I said, we've always used technology for our advantage. And, you know, I remember, you know, when just fax machines were starting to become popular. You know, we were already using fax machines for, you know, for the national office here and different state organizations and stuff like that. And I remember how fax machine, we would start using that, and the media just got excited and couldn't believe.
They sent us a fax.
You couldn't believe that the Knights, you know, this white nationalist organization is using fax machines. I mean, and they were very impressed with it. So the Knights has historically have always had the ability.
A lot of young people out here is thinking, what is a fax machine?
Right. But the Knights have always had it, historically have had the ability to change with technology. And most white organizations, nationalist organizations, do not, because most of them historically they're around for 4 or 5 years and they just no longer in existence. But the Knights Party have a proven pattern where we have always kept with technology and we've used that for our advantage. You know?
Well, you know, that really is a testimony to the level of support of the membership and his friends and supporters that are out there, because they recognize that, like you said, Jason, a lot of organizations come and go. There's some very fine white nationalist or nationalist type newspapers and media outlets. But as far as like organizations, rock solid organizations, you know, the Knights Party has a proven track record of longevity. And that's important because people know that here's an organization that they can get behind, membership organization they can support whether they join or not, that isn't going to pack up its bags and be out the door next week. It's there, it's been around, it's continuing, it's evolving, it's moving forward, and they know that they can put their support behind this and that we're, you know, good stewards of the money and finances and support, and that we're going to advance and be progressive with the resources and technology available.
Well, I think one good example of that is recently, and some people may not be aware of it, others may be, but there was a program, A&E, was coming out about calling, coming out of KKK.
Escaping KKK and then Generation KKK.
Right.
I think maybe one was a subtitle.
Yeah, and this was a program talking about just the Klan in general and maybe the different families in the Klan or people trying to escape in the Klan. I mean, their programs, it was kind of shifting according to what the producers were wanting.
Right.
But the gist of it is they had come to us, the Knights, for 6-7 months wanting us to be premiering basically on this program. And we started looking at it. We're like, no, this is not right. You're trying to have a reality show to fit your narrative, you know? And so we refused to be participate
of that. Yeah, time and time again.
Right? And constantly.
Before we go on anymore, let's acknowledge that we have Caleb and Tatum here.
Okay.
Because they've been sitting very good for a while, but I think they want to go and do something else now.
Okay. Tatum, can you say hi?
Hi.
They are young, so they've been listening to the news. They've been listening and learning because they'll be a spokesman someday.
Well, Tatum is 8 years old. He's my second oldest son. And then we have Caleb. Say, Caleb, say hi. Hi.
Say, roll out.
Say hi.
Hi.
And he is 10 years old. He's going to be 11 in February. He's my oldest son. And, of course, Tayton just rolled his eyes. And so, anyway, yes.
Tayton, you know, he's so competitive. He's hoping someday he can be the oldest son.
He wants to be the oldest son someday. And so.
Keep trying, Tate. Keep trying.
Caleb says, sorry, but that slot's filled.
Yes, slot is filled. But anyway, yeah, we encourage family. We encourage children being surround us all the time regarding you know, our shows and what we do. It's a family affair. So whenever we can have children around, we encourage that.
So look come over and say goodbye to everyone. Roll out until we hear you.
Goodbye.
Okay.
Awesome. But
well, and basically that's what this A&E program was about. It was trying to follow Klan families and the so-called discord that the Klan brings to families and family life. And when you looked over the different contracts and we looked over the papers, we're like, absolutely not.
First they don't off, make up stories.
We don't know any Klan families or people in the cause that have discord because of their beliefs. You might have some distant relatives or the crazy uncle or something that, you know, thinks you're nuts because you love your race and heritage. But as far as causing discord or problems, we've never experienced that. We don't know any families that have experienced that. You know, we're not saying that.
Yeah, but I mean, we know a family say my brother don't agree with us, but they're not, him and his brother may not be like fighting and arguing.
Yeah,
you know?
But this is like, just,
you know,
yeah,
he don't agree with us. All right, okay, that's
yeah,
it. You know?
But the point of this program was to follow different families and excruciating issues,
agony, yeah.
And agony, even to the point of bringing in counselors and just a whole bunch of made up drama.
Escaping the Klan.
Right.
I mean, that's like saying, I escaped the Republican Party.
Right.
You know? Yeah, but they're trying,
I escaped
they're
First
trying
Baptist
to,
Church.
They're trying to liken it to, like, as if you were like, in the mob.
Right. Well, yeah. That's why I use that phrase. That's what they're trying to apply, like something you got to escape from.
Well, and the part I was kind of getting at is because we know that's, you know, these major media conglomerates, they want that. That's their reality show. And so when they came to us, we have standards, and we're like, absolutely not. We're not going to do this. You know, we have a standard. We have a track history. We're not going to tarnish our name because you want to do some type of reality show. So
what this isn't the first time we've been approached for a reality show.
Exactly. Definitely not the first time. But then they went to some other, I guess, so-called Klan groups that I really have never heard before, and started producing shows, not shows, but taping shows with them. But what made me sick more than anything is then it comes out that these producers were paying these so-called Klan members, you know, mm-hmm. who's saying, yes, we are part of the Klan.
Now, one storyline said prominent Klan members.
Yeah, prominent members, whoever that is.
So prominent.
You know, but the thing is, they were paying them money. And then they so-called, because I won't say so-called because I don't consider them legitimate Klan members, but then they claim that they changed their stories. You know, the Klansmen would right. say things and do things in order to get money. You know, they basically were being paid off.
And they're going along with it.
So they don't have no legitimate interest. They're not a legitimate organization. That these so-called Klan members and Klan groups that they were airing and videotaping were people that had nothing to do with even with the white national organizations 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago, you know, and they 4 or 5 years from now, they won't even be in existence, you know. So the fact is that you have these certain people that don't really have any loyalty to the white nationalist cause. If a producer can give them money to give them their narrative, they're going to do it. Kind of like the Jerry Springer show. And so the point is, the Nice Party is, I mean, it's a real organization, legitimate organization, a proven track history with our associates, and the media knows that.
Right.
Now, the media knows
that. Now, a couple things I want to point out in regard to that. Some of the different families that were highlighted in this program, like you said, Jason, they've been involved in the Klan or white nationalist movement, most of them for, you know, just a few years or so. I don't necessarily doubt their sincerity that they, you know, wanted to do good. But here's the difference, is wanting to do something for your people and wanting to be in leadership and having the ability, knowledge, and capability to do so are two different things.
You got to be prepared.
You have to be prepared.
Yeah.
And the thing is I have no doubt that these producers came to them, showed them these very lengthy contracts, the fact that they were going to get paid so much per episode, and that these people, unprepared, unskilled in media relations, just basically no knowledge whatsoever about how to function in the real world with the media, unprepared. Poor leadership just signed their name on the bottom line. And then when it came down to, okay, here's the producers, and the producers are like, okay, we want you to say the N-word. And they're like, you know, because a couple of them in this Variety expose piece, a couple of the Klan people said, well, no, we're not going to say that. Okay, so they knew enough that that wasn't a good thing to do. But then the producers say, well, you signed this contract. And
this.
It says in point 7 subsection C and B that you have to do thus and thus and thus. And we've got our attorneys, and you're going to be sued for X amount of dollars if you don't do this. And so in a way, they were kind of forced to. I guess they could have gone ahead and say, well, go ahead and sue us. But again, they shouldn't have put their names on those contracts. They're unprepared. If you don't have the quality and capability to be in a leadership position and accurately represent our cause, then don't put yourself out there to do it. Don't call yourself a leader. Don't put yourself in that position. And that's really where the problem laid with this whole deal. Is you got people that were wanting to be leaders of the Klan or white nationalist movement that just totally have no idea what they're doing.
They really don't.
And then you got these, you know, swanky TV people coming in there. And we deal with TV and media all the time. But we know how to judge between what's going to be a real legitimate news piece, what's just going to be fictional. One of these Klan people.
And the thing is, we know, not only do we know that, we've told them no.
We tell them no.
It's like come here, we're little puppets. We tell them, this is what we're going to do. We tell them, this is what we're going to do.
We don't need you.
Yeah.
And sometimes we
will let you stand over here for the interview. And we'll say, no, we're going to stand over there for the interview.
Right.
And if they say, well, we don't like it over there, I say, then too bad. Goodbye.
Pack up your bags and leave. Yeah. And sometimes we have them sign contracts with us.
Right.
Yeah.
That this is what you're allowed to do. This is where you can put your camera and
right.
This is what you can do with your camera now.
Yeah, exactly.
These producers, the A&E, even went so far as to reconstruct and fake a cross lighting.
Right.
A fake cross lighting that their own camera people and producers did just so that they could come up with a derogatory setting.
This was a piece released by the national media.
Yeah.
I never saw anything on TV, but it was Variety magazine that deals with the entertainment industry.
Right.
So it's well documented. These are the events that happened. If I recall, you can correct me if I'm wrong, one of the scenarios they were even creating was a wife of one of the so-called Klan members. She was to pretend that she was a sister or something like that, and that she was wanted to get out of the Klan, or should ex-wife.
It was the wife of one of the
members. But it was a made-up scenario, a whole made-up story.
It was the wife of one of the members who actually is a member herself. They wanted her to play the part of a spouse who was terrified and upset that her husband was in the Klan. And she said, I'm not going to do that because I'm a Klan member myself.
Okay.
And so they went and found a female cousin of this man and got her to come in and paid her to play the part of his wife.
Okay.
A totally made up fictional character.
Fake news.
Yeah.
Totally fake. Yeah. Talk about fake news. Yeah.
But the thing is, things like this is we've been suspicious of things. This is the first time we actually see documentation.
Right.
But we have seen so-called interviews on TV and they so-called clan leader and so-and-so. And we've been in this room for a long time. We're thinking, who is this person? I never heard of that person. I never heard, you know.
And yeah, not because we don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
They don't exist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're actors. They hire actors. I suspect most of these people on the show, like Jerry Springer, I don't know if he's even on anymore.
Right.
But were actors.
Yeah.
Right. That they brought on there, acted out a part to belittle and malign those within the white nationalist movement. Make it as appear like we're all ignorant, backward, knuckle-dragging troglodytes who have no idea of what's happening in the real world. And they put them and project them and introduce them as your white nationalist leaders.
Right.
And people
said, and all the legitimate nationalist leaders are like, who are these people?
Yeah.
Right. You know, like, who are them? But like Rachel was saying about professionalism, when they these producers came and said, well, this is what we're the angle we're wanting, escaping the Klan, we're like, oh.
Yeah.
What?
The red flags were off the bat.
The discussion has ended, you know? And that's where the professionalism comes in, is we have a narrative we want our American people to listen to. We have an agenda. We have a political agenda. We have we want to reach our people. And we want to put our best foot forward.
Yeah, and if we can use the media to project that narrative, then we will.
Right.
But if the media cannot be manipulated.
They're going to tarnish our names.
I don't use that word, but if they're not going to be honest, if they're not going to be honest, if they're going to be present fake news, if they're going to lie, they're going to drive a line, create actors, if they're going to promote an agenda that is anti-white, then we're not having nothing to do with it. But if they're good, honest reporters, and we don't necessarily expect them to say everything we agree with, but let us at least have the image of being honest.
Right.
Well, you know, part of this goes back again to that Senate hearing, because one of the other points that many of them were talking about in relation to Russia and the so-called involvement in the electoral process and so on was the fact that the United States needs to begin to do more in the area of supplying misinformation. And they talked about Radio Free America and these different things that the United States utilized during the Second World War in Korea and Vietnam, and that they need to really shore up their cyber presence in the world. And they directly talked about the need to begin to be more involved and more proactive in the area of misinformation on social media. And this involved different beliefs and so forth that they thought were detrimental to U.S. security. And people may kind of think about that in the areas of just Russia or China. But the people that are going to push that, this, you know, yeah, we really need to put in several billion dollars into having an entire core of misinformation soldiers out there on social media. The real goal of that is to supply misinformation and fake news about white nationalists and white nationalist organizations and Christianity and so forth. And so, you know, the fact that they're talking about this in social media now doesn't mean that they haven't been doing that for many decades, just like COINTEL back in the 60s. Yeah.
The Hillary campaign had a team of people hired and paid to create lies, distortion about Trump and so forth during the campaign.
Yeah.
Right.
So I think we're about out of time here for today's show because we...
It's a shortened version this week.
Short and sweet.
Short and sweet.
So,
yeah, but just, you know, again, just... When people are gauging the legitimacy of white nationalist patriotic organizations out there, the two criteria that you need to really use is, one, does that organization espouse Christianity? Because if it does not espouse Christianity And if it attempts to subvert or attack Christianity in any way, then they are not being true to the values that America was founded upon. And second is if they in any way, shape, or form adhere or promote any type of homosexuality or race mixing or adoration for other races as far as like bringing them kind of into their camp type deal, then again, they're not holding true to the ideals of Western Christian civilization. And, you know, as the sentiment and support for white nationalism and U.S. sovereignty and patriotism begins to surge, there's going to be an attempt by people out there, maybe agents of misinformation, maybe with their own organizations, who are going to attempt to covert that this rise of this movement by interjecting it with their own causes, their own movements. And you need to be able to gauge whether those are legitimate groups or not. If they've got homosexuals or non-whites coming and speaking at their conferences, or if they're denigrating Christianity, then they're not legitimate organizations for the white nationalist cause.
Absolutely. I agree. So people can support this cause with a confidence and faith and assurance that we were here yesterday carrying a message. We haven't waffled. We haven't turned. We're holding true to the faith of our forefathers, the Christian ideals of our forefathers, the faith of our forefathers, and the patriotism. And we're going to continue on that. And we're drawing together men and women throughout the country from all spectrums, economic positions of life, who are gathered together for one purpose, and that is to love their God and to love their people, and to carry forth a powerful message of white Christian revival. So people can support this with that confidence that we are here as your spokesman to take this wonderful message of hope and deliverance to our nation.
And with that, we have our conference coming up, our Faith and Freedom Conference, April
28th, 29th, and 30th.
Put it on the calendar.
Right now. Put it on the calendar and then make the plans and come. It's an easy drive for most of the, you might have drive throughout the night to get here, but it's going to be well worth it.
Bring your family.
People drive late to the night to go to a rock concert somewhere.
Right.
You know, are we going to be told, are you going to tell us that a teenager going to a rock concert, or you go to a rock concert when you're a teenager, or even some older people going to a rock concert, is a more valuable activity than coming here and bring your family to a white Christian retreat to uphold the bloodstained banner of Jesus Christ and take this message to our nation? So unless there's something else to say, let's wrap it up. This is Thomas Robb.
Jason Robb.
Rachel Pendergraf. Yeah. Hey, if you drove all night to go to a Trump rally,
that's
you
right.
can come to the conference here.
And what is our new media site going to be? Are we ready to announce that yet?
We'll announce it next week.
Fantastic. Listen to us next week. Until next time, this is Thomas Robb reminding you to love your God and to love your people.